Hello and welcome to the May 13th, 2010 StocksProspects.com podcast. I'm Mike Andrews and I'm here with Chris Hatfield, Chris Mellon, and Ian Theodoretis. Today we're going to be talking about early season impressions of the 2010 season now that we're about a month into the season. We're also going to kind of touch on a draft preview really quick, just almost a draft preview we're doing a full draft podcast later on in early June. Then we're going to try a new segment called Triple Play, and we'll end with quick hits. So with that, I'm going to go into the early season impressions. And the first thing that comes to our mind that we've been talking about is some prospects that have just been showing kind of tools in the past and never really put that on into the stat line and performance are kind of coming around and really, really showing it. Showing performance this year and putting up some decent stats. So I'm going to ask Ian, first off the bat, what players have really impressed you so far this spring?
I think the two that come to mind right away are the two most impressive players for Salem, which have been Will Miller-Brooks and Oscar Tejeda. I guess you could include Ryan LaVarnway in that too, but I'm talking about in terms of that group of players who have only shown tools in the past. And I think especially Will Miller-Brooks. This is someone who we've seen a lot of in the past, and he has always kind of, when you see him at the game, he does look like the best player on the field. But then when you take an objective look at his numbers, you say, well, he strikes out a lot. He's never really produced for a full season. And this year, he really has put it together. He's cut down on his strikeouts. The power is there. He's not hitting as many home runs as you would like, but he's still hitting a lot of doubles. And with Oscar Tejeda, you're seeing someone who he's still not walking. In fact, he's not walking at all, but he's really hitting for a lot of power. I think he has like a .565 slugging percentage. And he's made a lot of contact this year, which is a good sign.
Nice. Another guy that's kind of impressed me, so far this year with the stat line and a couple times I've seen him is Daniel Nava. Chris Mellon, you got to see him a little bit in the spring and then on opening day. What kind of impressions has he made on you?
He's one of those guys that just seems to be a natural hitter. Like, he has an understanding of what's going on around him in terms of how to hit. I remember when he first came up to Portland last year, it might have been one of his first or second games that I actually got to see, and it was like the first pitch. He was batting leadoff for the team back then, and like the first pitch of the game, he just lines a shot right up the middle. And it was like, okay, you know, this guy's got a little something there. And I know I think he struggled in the beginning with his strikeouts to walks, but he just seems to have an understanding of what's going on. And it's almost like, you know, everybody waits for the guy to kind of the bottom to fall out, but every level he's been at, he just keeps hitting. And now he's in Triple A and he's hitting. So the next step is, let's see if he can hit in the major leagues.
Yeah, he might get a chance soon. I thought one of the really good quotes I heard about him earlier in the spring was from one of the Pawtucket hitting coaches, I believe, was that he just goes up there and is able to recreate his swing from batting practice to the game and from at-bat to at-bat better than any player he'd ever seen in his life. So that's something that's really telling about where his skill set lies and something that hopefully he'll carry over to the major leagues when he hopefully gets a chance, maybe this year even. Another guy that maybe hasn't been as impressive in the stat line if you look really quickly, but if you dig down deep, Ryan Kalish has been fairly impressive this year. Chris Hatfield, what are your thoughts on Kalish so far this year?
Oh, Kalish is, in my mind, kind of the obvious breakout, well, not breakout candidate, but candidate to most improve on his numbers from April. You look at his slash line, you know, the average on base and slugging percentage, it's not super impressive, but when you get beyond that and look at some peripherals, for example, his line drive percentage, he's walked more than he has struck out. He's one of a handful of guys in the system to have done that. He's kind of showing a lot more.
He's walked a lot more.
Right. Yeah, it's significant. He's showing a mastery almost of Double A without it actually translating into his stat line. And if you look at his average on balls in play compared to his batted ball data, line drive percentage and such, it's not really translating. He's getting really unlucky is what the data kind of shows you. So he's a guy who, while the numbers may not be there, he still looks like he's a candidate for probably a midseason promotion to Pawtucket. You've got to think, I mean, the only thing that would hold him back is the fact that it's awfully crowded there. But if you look right now, Bubba Bell is starting in right field. Well, he's a guy who, could potentially be a major league backup. He's not a guy who they're going to hold back Kalish for. Even I think the only guy who's there really who they wouldn't hold him back for is Reddick, although Nava, like we said earlier, has been tearing the cover off the ball. So he's a guy to really keep an eye on to improve on his April numbers. I think he's really going to start lighting it up in May and June, and hopefully carry that up to a promotion to AAA.
I think one of the interesting stats about Kalish is that he's sixth, I think, in the organization in contact percentage, and he's also second in strikeout looking percentage, meaning that even when he's striking out, it's not because he's swinging and missing, and when he is swinging, he's making contact. So this
Right.
is someone, he's shown that he, and Chris, you've seen him, that he gets the bat on the ball consistently.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and that was another point. Sorry to interrupt. That was another point that was he's. I think some of it maybe is that he just isn't swinging enough a little bit in terms of he hasn't gotten his swing down because I saw him and he swung four times and I think it was five at bats. He saw like 23 pitches. He swung at four of them. I mean, he takes so many pitches that it could be that it's just taking him time to get that swing down and get back into rhythm. Because when he does swing, it's a strike. He doesn't chase any balls, and it's almost like his mastery of the strike zone right now is almost too good.
It almost reminds me of Pedroia in his rookie year, where he got off to that 6 weeks where his stats were just really bad. But if you kind of looked at the peripherals, you said he's just getting unlucky, and his stats are about to take off, and they did. And that might be something that you can expect from Ryan Kalish in towards the end of late May and into June is his stats to really take off, even if he makes it in the Eastern League for that far. He might end up in the International League, regardless of what happens to his stats in the next month. That wouldn't surprise me at all. Another guy that hasn't been getting really much attention so far this season, but something that I'm starting to keep my eye on is Chris McGinnis down in Greenville. He's hitting 289, 413, 509. That's isolated plate discipline of about, I don't know, 134, something like that. And he's also got five home runs, which I believe is leading the Greenville team, showing a lot of power lately, and kind of just showing the ability to get some clutch hitting down there. He's striking out a little bit too much, 23 times in 114 at bats, but that's not too bad. He's somebody that's came to Lowell last year with a really excellent kind of a mastery of the strike zone and a really great plate approach, and somebody that could he's on the older side for Greenville, somebody that could end up in Salem and might have continued success there. I know that Chris Mellon saw him quite a bit last year in Lowell. Any comments on McGinnis?
With McGinnis, I think, last year at Lowell, even though he kind of tailed off at the end of the year, I thought he was the second most impressive hitter behind Ryan Westmoreland. I kind of thought that he would kind of ease into Greenville and he would be able to put up some good numbers. I wasn't sure, quite sure the power would actually show because I know Ian can talk about this too, that he has a really topspin heavy swing and he doesn't hit. At least last year, he didn't hit a lot of line drives with a ton of backspin that seemed like they were going to carry out of the ballpark. But so it's been a good surprise. He's been able to maintain some power while also keeping his strikeout to walks kind of in line.
Just as some sort of context for him, and this is obviously a small sample, but the only other really significant or prominent hitter out of the Citadel in the last decade has been Dallas McPherson, who I'm not sure if you guys remember him, but he was kind of a big prospect for a couple of years for the Angels, and he got up to the big leagues and he couldn't handle it. But McGinnis's numbers at the Citadel were far superior to McPherson in terms of OPS, in terms of walk to strikeout ratio, everything. And he got much less hype coming up to the draft. A lot of that is his tools, as Chris said, he was projected to hit for a lot less power. But he produced at Lowell last year in a pitching heavy league, and he's producing so far this year.
Okay. A few other guys that kind of are just sitting there in the rankings together and not really showing great production, but are Yermico Navarro, Luis Exposito, and Chishwin Lin in Portland. They're all hitting in the 250 to 270 range and all putting up almost identical on base percentages in the 370s. So all of them have isolated plate disciplines over 100, and both the Navarro and Exposito's power down a little bit, and Lynn isn't showing really any power at all with a 298 slugging. Chris Mellon, just going back to you again, you've got to see Portland a few times, and you talked to Lynn last week. Anything to take away from these three guys so far this year?
I'd say out of the three of them, Exposito looks the best at the plate, and you can tell. I wrote that in the ladder this last week. You can tell that he is definitely working on his plate discipline, and he's trying to focus on what's going to get make him successful at AAA and also in the big league. So I think why people might look at his stat line and not panic, but be like, oh, where are the home runs? You know, what's going on with him? He is definitely working on something. When I was in the clubhouse, I noticed him and Arnie having a long conversation, and I know that they're trying to get him to take that next step with his approach, because he was more of a free swinger, and now they're trying to get him ready to be, you know, be ready for the major leagues. For Navarro, he's just kind of been, I don't know, not stuck in neutral, but just a couple steps forward, a step back, you know, another couple steps back, a couple steps forward. He's just kind of still feeling things out. And I know Lynn's been getting better. When I saw Lynn, he was in a bad funk. He didn't really look good at all. And I'm going to be back up there on Tuesday, so hopefully I have more to go on when I see him on Tuesday.
And Navarro, do you think that his power might have been zapped at all from his sore wrist still, or is that not an excuse we should use?
It could possibly be. He missed, what was it,
he missed 12 games, yeah, two weeks about.
So I really didn't get a feel for what was actually going on with this wrist. They're actually kind of closed up there about injuries. You have to go right to Arnie to get any scoop on that. But I don't really know in the wrist. I don't know what would keep you out of the lineup for two weeks, but they wouldn't put you on the DL with. So
right.
You know, you gotta. I don't know. I don't want to guess that it was. I don't know if he got hit by a pitch or if it was something that he was dealing with from the cold weather, some post surgery stuff. I'm not quite on that one.
Yeah, because he was dropping bombs down in spring training and in both BP and in games nonstop for the week we were there, and only one home run to the season has kind of surprised me so far.
Well, they don't throw many. They don't throw many fastballs either. There's definitely a book out on Exposito and Navarro. They don't see many fastballs right now.
Okay, Chris,
the thing I was gonna say with Navarro, Chris mentioned putting him on the DL. The thing you have to remember with the minor leagues too is that they're not going to bother putting a guy on the DL unless they want to bring someone in to replace him. So it probably just could have been a situation of where they knew they had Chang to play third. They didn't really want to call someone up just for the sake of putting them on the bench. So that might have been why they probably just didn't bother putting him on the DL.
They didn't want to fly somebody up from Florida or from
figuring it was going to be for 2 weeks. And the other thing too, just with Exposito, Chris mentioned that they're probably working on him with something. One thing that he's been doing a lot more of this year than you would think is DHing, especially recently. I think this week he might have gone three straight games where he was the DH, which kind of signals to me that they're, you know, working on him with something at the plate, and they don't want him to have to worry about, you know, all the stuff that goes with catching as well. And I know that's a strategy they used with Reddick recently up in Pawtucket when he was kind of, you know, struggling a bit. They DH'd him, and I think in Exposito's case, it might just go the other way, where he's doing well, but they want him to work more on certain aspects, so they're letting him DH a little more than they otherwise normally would. So that kind of backs up what Chris posited a little earlier.
And the last two guys that I kind of want to talk about are one, Anthony Rizzo. There's not a whole lot to say on him. He's doing as expected. He's got that recent promotion to Portland and is looking good early on. We're hearing that he was told right at the end of spring training that he would have been ready for Portland now, but he was kind of blocked by Lars. So he got the promotion very quickly after Lars was sent up to Portland, even though he wasn't doing terribly well in Salem, but it was a very small sample size. And the last guy I want to talk about is Jose Iglesias. I just want to open it up to what you guys think so far about the defense has been as advertised. There's been a few errors, but that's really attributable to just, from what I understand, just reaching balls that he had no business getting to. But the offense is from the stat line anyways, is looking better than expected so far. Anybody want to comment on that? How about Ian?
Yeah, you know, he really has been getting a lot of hype on our site and in the press for the most part. And I think he's still a really good prospect, but I'm still hesitant to really fall for the hype, just because even though he's tremendously young for the league, and he is, and it is the early season, and hitting in the Eastern League in the early season is difficult. He hasn't shown much power, and he hasn't shown much plate discipline. He's shown great defense, and he has shown the ability to make good contact, above average contact. But I'm not going to go crazy yet, just because it seems like everyone is kind of buying. I'm just going to stay back a little.
All right, I think maybe I'm with you on that one.
The thing with Mike, if I could, the thing with
Sure.
Iglesias too, it seems like to me a lot of what he needs to work on, Ian mentioned plate discipline. I think it's just kind of an approach both at the plate and just in general to the game, adjusting to life in the United States. I mean, apparently the cold weather has been an absolute shock to his system for what we're hearing. I mean, this is a kid who is in Portland. It's not like he went from Cuba to the South Atlantic League. He's up in, Maine in April, and just that, and just adjusting to playing professional baseball. Granted, he played in the league down in Cuba, but it's a long season. As much as some people might call for him to get promoted later in the year, I think he stays in Portland all year. I think he needs to be in one place, get some stability. I mean, if I can make a really, really dangerous comparison, and I'm not saying that this is who Iglesias is going to become, but the situation almost kind of reminds me of a Hanley Ramirez type situation where talent wise, double A, he probably could be playing above double A, but just as far as learning the game and how to play the game from a professionalism standpoint, I think double A is where he needs to be all year, even if it may not necessarily be challenging in some ways, maybe defensively. Just learning how to be a professional baseball player from a standpoint, I think he needs to be there all year long, despite what he may hit, what his stat line might look like, if you just look at average and on base and things like that.
Something to watch for with him too is how he is hitting come late July, August, because who knows if he's really played 6 months straight of baseball ever in his life, and he doesn't really have a huge frame that maybe he'd be able to used to having the wear and tear that an everyday player would have. So he, I mean, hopping right, skipping over short season ball, skipping over Greenville, skipping over Salem, and going right to Portland is something that might be a concern, whether he's going to be able to handle the whole 6 month season. But that's something to be seen. I mean, who knows? I did say that that was the last topic I wanted to cover on this first section, but there was one other topic I wanted to kind of discuss, and that is players that have kind of looked overmatched in their respective leagues. The first couple players that come to mind are Jason Place and David Mailman, who haven't had a lot of success in the Eastern League and the Carolina League, respectively. And another guy that isn't really in the same category, but stat-wise has been so this year so far, as Josh Reddick in Pawtucket is just really not performed in Pawtucket in or even above double A since he's been there. So these three guys, not saying that that anybody wants to give up on any of these guys, but where are they in your heads right now? We'll go to Chris Mellon first. I kind of want to ask all three of you guys.
Let's see. So I'll touch on Mailman. Actually, it's kind of funny. I thought he looked really good in spring training. I thought he was playing with the double A team. He was staying back on the ball well. He was going the other way, using his hands real well, and he would turn on some balls. He looked a little bit more physically mature, and I just kind of thought that he was going to get it. And like I thought he would kind of follow the path that he followed last year, a good first half in high A and challenge for promotion to Triple A, Double A, but I guess he's just really still overmatched with in terms of making solid contact. And I'm kind of a lot thinking along the lines that it's really mental with him right now. That it's something that, for whatever reason, when a couple of offers pile up on him, then it kind of starts to turn and go south. I just think that it's really a mental thing with him because his skill, like his bat and everything, he looked good. I don't know why it hasn't transferred over quite as well yet in terms of Mailman.
How about place?
We talk a lot about Place, and with him, it's just kind of read some of the things that people have posted on the board, and then talking to some other people. I know, Mike, in the ESPN article, you had mentioned that a scout said that he just really looks like he's stuck in neutral. And I think that that's kind of what it is. He's stuck in neutral, and he's almost even going backwards at this point. It's just kind of, it's just like maybe he's just not going to get that recognition and that approach down to where it's going to allow him to take that power potential and the way he hits in batting practice and bring it to games, because I don't want to use the term lost, but he just completely fights it at the plate, and he still looks like, you know, a young hitter overmatched by off-speed pitches.
Right.
And in Double A, that's not really a good sign at this point.
I think with place, it's just a matter of, I think it's just not there. You know, it's just at some point you're going to peter out,
mm-hmm.
because you either don't have the talent or you don't have the ability to adjust to what people are doing to you.
Mm.
It just seems like they challenged him with Double A. It was kind of a do or die challenge.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem like it's going to work.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not. And it's
you
not.
You might be right on that one.
In regards to place too, it's not for a lack of effort. It's mm-hmm. not for a lack of work that he puts into his craft. I've seen him. I saw him in the cages constantly hitting. He hustles. I mean, he's into the game. He plays a good defensive outfield when he's in there. But when he just comes to the plate, it's kind of just like, I mean, I guess I would use the word, you know, over his head. That's
Okay, Chris Hatfield, I'm going to ask you about Josh Reddick. I know you're going to get down to a couple games in Pawtucket this weekend, so unfortunately my question might be a little premature. but what do you make of his stat line so far? What you've seen of him this year so far?
Well, the thing that always seems to get brought up with guys who are in AAA that are on the 40-man roster and were in Major League camp in the spring for a long time is the disappointment of getting sent to Pawtucket. But he's even said in interviews that it's not like he really expected to break camp with the Red Sox.
Yep.
You look at who they acquired Mike Cameron in the offseason, and they had Ellsbury and Drew. It's not like they were going to bring him to Boston to be the fourth outfielder, especially because, I mean, they went and traded for Jeremy Hermita. So I don't know if I buy that excuse. Is he maybe pressing to try and impress the Red Sox brass? I don't know, but I mean, you brought up the numbers since he was promoted to Double A. I mean, his slash line is not very good at all. I mean, I don't know if you've got that handy or not, Mike.
But I don't, but from my memory, I mean, I've been kind of keep tracking that, and it's changed since my last report, but it's somewhere in the lines of 212, 235, 400, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and he, you know, the isolated power is there. No one doubts his ability to put a charge into the ball when he connects with it. But, you know, how much of it was him trying to rework his approach? Because, you know, he's mentioned that that was one of the big things that the club had said to him, is the kind of free swinging thing and not doing that. Is part of it him working on that? Is part of it him working on that too much almost, you know, just not going up there, seeing the ball and hitting it and concentrating too much on waiting for his pitch when that's right. not his natural inclination. I think there was a quote from an unnamed Boston scout we saw somewhere where his problem is, how do you tell a guy not to hit a ball that he knows he can hit? Mm-hmm. You know, if he can hit that ball that's 3 inches off the plate, how do you get him to not swing at it?
Right.
So, I mean, maybe it's just growing pains at this point. The talent's there. I mean, he plays a great defensive outfield. You know, he's got that arm. We keep hearing about that, but at some point you have to produce in order to get the call up to the majors. You know, I mean, people are talking about Nava perhaps passing him for the next call up. If the next guy you need is a corner outfielder, it's getting really difficult to counter that argument. You know,
yeah, you almost want to leave Reddick and just let him get into a groove at some point, because he just hasn't gotten into a groove other than maybe 5 weeks in Portland last year. And that number I quoted before is not a small sample size. It's approaching 700 plate appearances.
We did see an interview earlier this year where they talked to the Pawtucket hitting coach, or maybe it was the manager.
It was Lavulo.
Yeah.
It was the manager. And he talked about how, you know, this is AAA. It's not really Double A anymore, where everyone has talent and everyone has tools, but you're kind of just going out there and playing. In AAA, there are pitchers who are veterans from the major leagues, and they're gonna adjust to what you're doing. They're gonna and that's what happened. They started throwing him a lot of off-speed pitches, and he had not adjusted to it yet. So I think it's a mixture of that. I think it's a mixture of bad luck. He does have a 200 ISO, or batting average on balls in play, and he's hitting a lot of line drives. So I think that's kind of some, there's some bad luck involved. But I'm not down on him yet. I still believe he's a hitter and he's gonna hit.
Although, if you listen to Brian Sabian, who should be he should be tearing the cover off the ball because AAA is terrible.
That was Brian, San Francisco Giants GM Brian Sabian, who said earlier in the week when people were angry at him for not, who was it that he's not bringing up? Is
Posey.
it Posey? They're saying, well, why don't you just bring him up? And they're saying he's not ready. He hasn't proved anything because just
Triple A
because he's hit
pitching is terrible.
Pawtucket, just because he hit in Triple A doesn't mean anything. Triple A is terrible. So.
I just hope Brian Sabian never goes to a New York Penn League game.
Right. Yeah.
Oh,
Apparently, he's never heard of Steven Strasburg either, so we'll see.
also, Mike, can I just make one quick point, which
Absolutely.
I think it's interesting that you didn't talk about this because it's another theme I think in the early season, which has been kind of the mediocre pitching.
Yeah.
There really hasn't been a pitcher who separated himself from the pack. You see Casey Kelly, who kind of he's done what he's expected to do. Same with Dubront and Pimentel. Mendez has been a big disappointment so far. It's early, but he's been a disappointment. Rivera has been good. Manny Rivera down in Greenville. He's been really the only pitcher to kind of distance himself or separate himself.
I think you're right. And one of the reasons I didn't bring it up is because we're kind of running low on time, and that
Okay.
seems like it's a topic all unto itself that we could spend a half an hour on. But I think that that's a decent way to put it so far, and there really hasn't been anyone that's kind of may had that breakout like Kelly had last year. Everyone's just kind of either doing what they were expected to do or not surpassing expectations, ex with the exception of maybe Manny Rivera. So with that, we're going to go to the draft preview, and I'm going to hand that over to Chris Mellon. We're only going to talk about it for about 5 minutes, but the draft preview, we're going to hand it over to Chris Mellon to moderate.
Okay, so it's hard to believe because it feels like opening day was just yesterday, but the first year player draft is coming up, which is I think one of the most exciting times here at with our SoxProspects.com community and within overall the baseball community. It seems like it draws a lot of attention recently. Especially recently, and it's one day where it's a couple days where things are very, very exciting. So that is slated to kick off June 7th through the 9th. And as we know, or maybe some people don't know, the Red Sox will be picking with the 20th pick, which they acquired from the Braves for signing Billy Wagner. They gave up their 29th pick to sign John Lackey, and then acquired some supplemental round picks for Jason Bay and Billy Wagner, which will be the 36th, the 39th, and the 57th pick, and their second round pick, the 80th pick, is given up in compensation for Marco Scudero. So I wanted to touch on a few maybe players that could potentially be around at the 20th slot. So I want to ask Ian. I know Ian's got his ear to the grindstone here. I want to ask him, a couple of players that he thinks that might fall to the Red Sox at 20, and if they're going to keep the strategy of targeting high school players in the first round this year, like they have with Kelly and Fuentes in the last couple of drafts.
I think the high school point is an interesting point because I did some research about a month ago and kind of since so I was looking at what the Sox spent in proportion between college and high school players, and since Theo has been GM, they spent about $19.5 million signing college players, and they spent about $23.5 million signing high school players. So they spent about $4 million on high school players since Theo has been GM. Having said that, the amount of major league at bats they've gotten from college players who they've drafted has been about 5,500. The amount of high school at bats has been zero, nothing. The amount of major league inning pitched from college players has been about 1,100. The amount of major leagues inning pitched from high school players has been 21. So I think you see kind of this huge disparity between the production you're getting from high school and college players. And I'm wondering if maybe the Sox are going to take a step back from that. I mean, there's no impetus to do it. But I think the reason I bring it up is because, from my perspective, this is a tremendously talented college class. And I think most of the draft analysts are kind of overlooking that. You're going to have a lot of players at number 20 who are really good solid college players who can produce and be in the majors within 2 years. I think the first person who comes to mind is Zach Cox, who's a third baseman from the University of Arkansas, who he might not even get to number 20, but if he does, he's just a really solid left-handed hitting third baseman. There's some questions about if he could stay at the position, but I think he can. And there's also some questions about his power, but I think it'll eventually show when he hits when he's in the plays in professional baseball. From the high school side, the Sox have been connected, not really officially, but just through mock drafts, with a high school third baseman named Nick Castellanos, who's a power hitting right-handed third baseman. He's another guy who can move to first base down the line. And there's also a lot of there's some great college pitching. There really is players who can be up within a year and a half, 2 years, who someone like I guess I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
What about Matt Harvey? What do you think of him?
I think Matt Harvey would be a very safe college pick, and I think he might end up sliding towards the back of the first round. It's actually been a really good bounce back year from him. His draft stock was way down coming into the year. He's had good numbers. He's been one of the most ground ball heavy pitchers in the country this year, and
Just so we let some of the listeners might not know who Matt Harvey is.
oh,
He's a
sorry.
right-handed pitcher out of North Carolina. He's actually projected to go in the 15 to 20 range. He's a big guy, 6'4", 225, and he throws in the 96 to 97 mile an hour range. Sorry to cut you off Ian there, but I just wanted to make sure for the people that might not know who he is, just a little bit of background.
Yeah, he's from Connecticut. He was connected to the Sox 3 years ago when he was a high school senior. They were thinking about drafting him. And one of his high school teammates in Connecticut is a kid named Jesse Hahn, who actually has elevated his draft stock above where Matt Harvey is. Jesse Hahn pitches for Virginia Tech. He might have the best college arm in the draft. He was great on the Cape last year. He throws up to 98 miles per hour. He's someone who the Sox could definitely target. And then if you fall back to the supplemental round picks, where we know they love to pick, this has become a cliche, but they love to pick the big arm kind of relief, the college relief pitcher with the sinker slider combination. This year there is a endless amount of talent to pitch to pick from for the Sox, so they'll have no problem kind of picking that pigeonholed player.
Ian is sorry to interrupt you. Is James Paxton a name? I know he was kind of linked to the Red Sox last year a little bit. I know he's making his debut in the Indy League either tonight or tomorrow. Is he
Tomorrow.
a guy that could tomorrow night? Is he a guy that could slide, kind of a Nick Hagedorn clone, if you may?
Yeah, he is. The Sox have never really showed interest in those guys who end up passing and going to the Indy League. So that will be interesting. I think he has as good a shot as any if he slides to that supplemental round. They won't take him in the first round.
Just for some background on him too, he's a lefty that was at Kentucky. He's got a fastball that hits 98, a really good slider, and somewhat of a changeup. Last year he was drafted by Toronto at 37th overall, turned down a $1 million bonus. This year he went to Kentucky, had some issues with Scott Boras being his agent and the discussions he had with the Blue Jays last year, and he ended up leaving Kentucky early. And not, he like Chris was saying that he's going to pitch for the Grand Prairie Air Hogs, an independent league team whose season starts tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good summary. And I guess the last guy I would touch on, which is kind of like the pie in the sky signability pick, is a kid named Austin Wilson, who's a high schooler out of California. He's he's someone who has tools which project, he could be Justin Upton, but he also could, he's the typical boom or bust pick. He has a pretty strong commitment to Stanford, which is scaring a lot of teams off. He could potentially be a Sox first round pick. He could fall to the 5th or 30th round. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he's somebody that the Sox might look at, a power hitting outfielder out of a high school in California, and he's somebody that really has a lot of potential that would be somebody that would be tough to pass up, but somebody also that could slide like a Ryan Westmoreland, or someone that could slide as a signability pick to later rounds.
And one more name that just kind of jumps out at me is a former Red Sox draft pick, but he didn't sign. Yasmani Grandal, catcher from Miami. Is that another? Could the Red Sox go and and try him again to see, if they could land him with the 20th pick or maybe the 36th?
I think in a perfect world, they would take him as quickly as possible if he got to number 20, but I don't think he's going to get there. There have been talks of as him going as high as number 5 or 3.
Right, he's going to have probably he's got a lot of helium right now, and something that happened with Tony Sanchez last year, he could go up to 4, and it's probably getting down to the 12 range might be the latest he goes. But I think the Sox would snatch him up if he fell to 20. He's a really solid defensive player, really good arm. He grew up in Cuba, and we all know that the Sox are in love with Cuba right now. For those of you who don't know, he was signed by the Sox in the 27th round back
He
in
wasn't, he wasn't
2007.
signed.
Not signed, I'm sorry, drafted by the Sox in the 27th round in 2007. Really close to signing, but it just didn't happen. And he's dominated ACC offensively right now. He's hitting somewhere in the 420s, and whoever's in second place is in averages is hitting in the 380s. And I think that his OBP is also in the mid 500s, and his slugging is well over 700. He's got 10 home runs. He's almost a sure bet catcher
He's a
to
very
be in the
solid,
major.
yeah, he's just a very solid catching prospect all around.
He's almost somebody that could be in the majors in a year and a half, and is just there's not really a lot of bust potential there. He's got the whole game.
All right,
anybody?
so, oh,
Okay,
sorry.
well, go ahead, Chris.
I was gonna just we're gonna get to a big draft podcast, so I was just gonna segue to the next segment, our new
Sure.
triple play.
Yeah.
So.
So I'm going to actually let Ian moderate this at first. This is his kind of idea that he came
It's
up
his
with, and it
baby.
sounds like, yeah, it's his baby. It sounds like it might
Well,
be kind of fun. So why don't you roll with it, Ian?
yeah, I mean, it's I'd love to take it as my own, but this is basically a kind of a verify or a version of the around the horn that you see on television. What
With
it is
less yelling.
basically, well, we'll see, right?
Ah,
I want to yell.
I want a chalkboard.
Each of us picks a topic and presents it to the other three. We kind of had some art, not arguing, but we had some t discussion about whether we should discuss the topic ahead of time and prepare for it, or kind of spring it on people at the spur of the moment. So we're going to try both ways, but we're going to.
I thought we're just gonna spring it. I didn't get any topics ahead of time.
Okay, well, that's, yeah,
Yeah,
fine.
me
We're
either.
going to spring it the first time.
Okay.
So we're each going to have a minute to answer the question, and each person moderates their own question. So I guess I'll start, and I'll tell you my question, and then I'll tell you when your time is up. So Chris Hatfield, this is you're up first, okay? You have
Okay.
1 minute. The
All
question
right.
is, in Aug so you're going to fill in the blank, and then you're going to provide reasoning for your fill in the blank.
Yes, sir.
In August, I will look back at player X and wonder why I was so high on him in March and April.
Oh, dear God. March and April, that's
April and May.
April or May. Okay, let's go with Shea Swan Lynn. I right now think he's got the potential to be a very good leadoff man, great defensive center fielder. We all know the tools are there, but he's still not hitting for any power. It's getting to the point where you got to wonder when it's going to come. I mean, double A is the level that's toughest to adjust to, so I'm not giving up on him or anything. But by the way, he's got a Q&A that's up on the blog today. Good job, Chris Mellon. But he's a guy that I could see definitely just never developing the power to really make it in the majors, almost like a Jacoby Ellsbury light with even less power and maybe a little bit less on base ability or so. I think I'm about at my time now.
Okay, yeah,
Sure.
that's 50.
Yeah.
So I forgot to say that the other addition to the game is that the person who moderates can pick the winner or who he thinks has the best argument. So that just keep that in mind.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Chris Melling, you're up.
Same question.
Same question.
Jeez. Let's see. Who was I high on? And I look back in August. I don't even. Who have I pumped? I'm gonna. I'll go with Roman Mendez. I'll say, I was too high on him after three spring training innings I saw him pitch. How's that sound? Because I don't know. His command of his fastball probably isn't as good as it looked in those three innings, and maybe his slider isn't quite as sharp, and he has a lot more work to do in terms of keeping the ball down. And his 96 mile an hour fastball is probably probably a little bit more straight considering how much those hitters have hit him in the early going so far.
Okay.
All right, my turn.
Yeah.
My answer is going to be, I can't believe on May 13th today that I was so high on Josh Reddick on April 13th, 1 month ago. to me, he's gone off a cliff to me. I just started digging through those stats this past month, and I'm wondering to myself why I was ever so high on him. Unfortunately, I had him ranked two for a lot of the offseason, three, and I still like him. I think now that he's more of a fourth, a third to fourth outfielder, that's going to come in and hit the occasional home run and be a good pinch hitter and a good defensive replacement, and a long-term sub when somebody gets injured. But I don't see him as a long-term starter at the major league level anymore, and I don't see him as a potential all-star, which was something that once crossed my mind. I just don't think that he's going to have the
Time.
pitch recognition or the plate discipline.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm gonna give the point to Chris Hatfield.
Alrighty.
Wow.
I think, yeah. Wow. You should hear that, Chris. Chris did not think you
Yes.
had it in you.
No, that's just that's your boy. That's your boy. Lynn's your boy. You
No,
know what I
I
mean?
don't. You know, I don't agree with the. I don't actually agree with the point, but I think his argument was the most convincing. How about
All
that?
right.
Well, Ian, without giving an explanation, who was your answer?
Oh, my answer. I'm not supposed to have that. I don't care. Okay.
There's no right or wrong answers here.
That's not
No,
fair.
mine would be Drew Headman, but that's because hindsight's 2020.
What?
Okay. With that,
I was high on Drew Headman last month.
okay.
Well, then,
Who
I guess I'll go next.
Ian, all right, if you're volunteering, go ahead.
All right. Well, mine, I'll admit that I came in with a question that had had two answers, and I'm realizing that that was a terrible idea. So I'm going to kind of take off of Ian's and switch it around a bit. I'm going to go with what player who is not really being looked at right now with any kind of regularity. So eliminate your Will Middlebrooks's and your Daniel Nava's and things like that. But what player do you think is kind of lurking off the radar right now, who isn't necessarily a top prospect? So let's get Kalish out of there too, that people are going to be paying attention to come August or so, as kind of saying like, wow, how did, you know, this is a guy I really have on my radar. So off the radar type guy right now who is going to be coming onto the radar. And I guess we'll start with Chris Mellon. Go.
Gee, let's see who's going to be coming onto the radar. And you're not saying not a top prospect type guy that you're
Exactly.
saying here.
Exactly.
I got mine ready if Chris
All
Mellon
right,
wants to think.
go
Yeah, go
answers.
ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
My answer is Chris McGinnis, for the reasons I discussed before. I really like his plate approach, and I really like the developing power. And since I discussed it before, I'm not going to really repeat everything I said. That's basically what I like about McGinnis.
Okay.
I got mine too, if Chris isn't ready.
Okay, Ian, go for it.
I think I'm feeling I'm gonna steal Chris's. That's why I think I'm going to go first.
Go ahead, steal it.
I'm gonna take Eamon Porteous,
Nice.
because this is a guy who I mean, if you can make the argument that coming into the season he should be getting attention to begin with. He had a great season last year in Salem. He had a great strikeout to innings pitch ratio. He's been good since he's been in the system. His only hiccup has been in the Arizona Fall League, and he started the season off really hot in Portland, where he's been challenged. I think that he's going to continue to be good, and I think he's eventually going to be a major league reliever.
Excellent.
I
That
like
was
it.
all right. I could have said that one. I'm gonna my plan B, in case it got stolen, I'm gonna say Kendall Vaughs, because I think because he didn't pitch last year with Lowell, that there wasn't a ton of buzz surrounding him. I know that I believe that he actually didn't pass the Red Sox strength test in order to pitch with Lowell. They sent him to strengthen his shoulder again, but I think he's gonna. You know, he's kind of reminds me of he could be on the level of Wilson, but I just don't think he got enough buzz. And as he pitches at Greenville and gets promoted to Salem later this summer, he's going to start rising in people's opinions.
I think he might have a tough time when he hits Salem, but I really like what he's done so far in Greenville.
I don't think we allowed for rebuttals there, Andrews.
Oh, well,
This
I
is
thought
not
there was going to
important.
be screaming and yelling.
Oh,
That's okay.
down on
Well,
Vols, by the way. I'm very down on Vols.
Oh, God. All right. All right, so we had McGinnis, Portis, and Vols, huh? I like the Vols pick. I'm gonna go with Mellon. I think he's got a lot of upside. Mellon had to go with Plan B, so we'll give that round to the
You're
other
gonna
Chris.
Be disappointed.
Well, thank you.
I think I would give it to Ian. I think he's right about Portis.
Thank you, Mike.
I wish I thought of that.
Me too. I wish I had thought of Portis too.
I think Portis is going to have a lot of Dustin Richardson in him, where he's going to do well as a reliever in Double A and then have some growing pains in Triple A. But that's a topic for another time. Who's next?
I might be able to buy that too. Who's left here? Me and
Mellon.
Mellon.
Yeah, you can go.
I'll go. Okay, my question is fairly simple and cut and dry, but the answer may not be fairly simple and cut and dry. Do the Red Sox have an elite farm system right now? Not looking backwards on who they've graduated in the past. Right now, do they have an elite farm system? Ian, go.
Yes, they do have an elite farm system. They have two they have two top level bats who are just coming into their own, Lars Anderson and Anthony Rizzo. They have top line pitching. They have Casey Kelly, who's one of the 25 best prospects in baseball. They had Ryan Westmoreland coming into the season. They could not have affected that. They could not have predicted that he was going to have major brain surgery. They have prospects in the rookie and short season leagues who haven't even played yet, who are $1 million bonus types who are just waiting to get the chance. Yes, they have a top tier system.
Chris Mellon, go.
They have a elite system for talent, but I think it's overall right now it's above average until we see some of those lower level talents who have yet to debut and where they are in their development and whether they're going to fill that gap of the guys rising up that seem to be like Anderson and Kelly that are rising towards the big leagues and going to be graduating in the next couple of years. So I want to just say above average right now. So above average is still very good in my opinion.
Excellent. Chris Hadfield, go.
Quick point of clarification. What's a elite? Top 10?
Top 5.
You're going to be
top
a good
five.
Lawyer, Chris.
Hey, you know, I do what I can. Okay, so for saying top 5 is elite, then I say no. I think it's definitely a top 10. I see him in the 6 to 10 range. Ian mentioned the guys. I see Kelly, Anderson, Rizzo, Iglesias, Kalish. I think those are all guys who are top 100 type guys. So maybe that pushes them over. However, I don't see the depth staying where it was coming into the season. I think there are a lot of guys who we hung our hat on as guys who could break out that are not breaking out, the mailmans and places of the world. And I think that the system is taking a step back in that respect. But a lot of this hinges on what they get in the draft too. So I'd say right now, no. But if they get a couple of signability guys in the draft on the level of a Kelly or Westmoreland level prospect, I think that they could become that later this summer. But for right now, no.
Time. Well played. I'm going to give the point. You guys have been lawyered on the Chris Hadfield front. He gets the point for putting them about the 6 to 10 range, which I'm going to agree with on him on that one. All right. Chris Mellon's turn.
All right. So since we've been inundated with promotions and all these predictions on promotions from people recently, and it seems like some of us have been like, no way. No one's getting promoted, and then all of a sudden guys get promoted. So here's my question. Would you have promoted Lars Anderson to AAA after 16 games in AA coming off the season that he had? And then I guess a little segue is what makes you either want to promote him or don't promote him? What do you look for to say that, okay, that guy's getting promoted? Hadfield, go ahead.
I would promote him, knowing that we've heard that he had a great minor league spring training. When we were down in Fort Myers, which was, I think, about three quarters of the way through spring training, maybe a little farther along, he was still with AAA. As a matter of fact, we were down there when he got sent down to AA. And if he showed the Red Sox then that he belonged in AAA, and he then went to AA and put up the numbers that showed that he belonged in AAA, then why keep him in AA? Yes, it's a little bit aggressive, and maybe you're dealing with a somewhat fragile psyche after what happened last season, but why keep a guy down just to pad his confidence by keeping him down in AA when he knows he shouldn't be there? He might get frustrated and you might get the exact opposite effect. So I don't see why you don't call him up if you think he's ready and he knows he's ready.
All right, time up right there. Okay. Ian?
Yes, I would have promoted him. If I think the only place he could have gone from where he was down. And if he goes down, and I think the Sox start worrying about, is he going to start falling into bad habits? You know, is he going to start thinking, oh, this is just, it's going the same way over and over again in Portland. By promoting him, you allow him to develop in a new environment and new place. And if he struggles off the bat, it's okay. He's allowed to develop there and he's allowed to fail.
All right, Mike.
I would not have promoted him. I think it's kind of the easy way out to say if you think he's ready, then promote him, because that's just a self-fulfilling prophecy. Personally, for me, I didn't think he was ready, but I also didn't get to see him for that 3 week period in spring training. For the 3 or 4 days I did see him, personally, I didn't think that he was ready for Pawtucket yet, but 16 games, he tore up the Eastern League. So I would have liked to seen 6 weeks of extended performance in the Eastern League before I promoted him to Pawtucket, to build up the confidence a little bit, to show that it wasn't a small sample size, and then I would have gone from there.
All right, so I'll give the nod to Mike based on how he presented the idea. I'm actually, for just for myself, I was on the fence 50-50. I can see both sides of the equation. I probably, I say I wouldn't have promoted him, but then I saw him and he looked like he was back to his old self and that he was ready to go. But at the same time, you know, I don't, he wasn't hitting any breaking balls. It was all fastball, so you don't know when he starts seeing those in AAA, but we'll see what happens.
Okay. And I think that's the end of triple play, am I right?
I believe
That's
so.
triple play.
Yes.
All right.
That's the inaugural
Did
triple
anybody
play.
get did anybody get 2 points?
You and Chris got 2 points.
Chris
Did
Hatfield got 2 points?
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did
All right,
you?
there you go. Chris
Did
Hatfield, I only got one.
Oh,
Chris
then I got.
Hatfield sounds like you're the winner.
Hey,
Yeah.
you know, it's not that easy being this good, I guess, is all I have to say.
Oh boy.
It's
I'm gonna
all
have to hear
right.
about that one at work. Okay.
Yeah, you probably are.
We're running out of time here, so we're going to move on to our quick hits. There was one thing I wanted to bring up about the draft, and that was that we will look for a 7-part draft installment starting on June 1st and running until June 7th, the morning of the draft. And just remember that round 1 and the supplemental round of the draft is going to be on June 7th, which is a Monday. No, a Tuesday, a Monday night, and it's going to be televised live. So, different than last year, the draft is going to be happening at night. So we'll have draft stuff leading up all day, and we'll
We're
have
gonna have
live draft
someone on
coverage
site. We're
here.
gonna have someone on at the Major League Draft.
That's
Oh, are
awesome.
we? Sweet.
That
Good
is
to know.
excellent news. Okay, quick hits. Let's go. Do you guys have any parting shots that you want to add? Are we doing that today?
I do. I have one
All
surprise
right,
one. Let's do it.
Ian, you go ahead. You guys can think of your parting shots while Ian's giving his.
This is a last-minute parting shot. Chase Wonlin just went deep for his first homer of the season. That invalidates Chris's argument. That point goes to Mike. Mike wins.
Beautiful. Okay. And it is
That's how things
Chris
work in
Hatfield.
Jersey. That's how things work in Jersey. That's my parting shot. That's how things work in Jersey. No. My parting shot is to just remember when you're looking at guys' numbers that, you know, despite what the arguments we may have just made with the Lars Anderson thing, or maybe, I guess this actually agrees with the one I made. Promotions are not made based on what a guy hits in a month at a certain level. I mean, the names of Mike Jones, Jarrett Stanley, guys who tore the cover off the ball for a month and a half and had everyone up in arms about why they weren't being promoted to a level. That's just not how it works. You have to look at the amount of time a guy's at a level. There are things that we don't see not being in places like Greenville and Salem that we don't know about that go into playing in promotions. So take a step back, take a breather, chill out a bit, get an adult beverage and relax. Just to, you know, easy on calling for the promotions. Be happily surprised when they come. That's the perspective I like to take to it. And yeah, so that's
All
about
right.
it. That in Jersey.
I'm gonna have to stall on mine because that was mine. I really should have known that Hatfield was gonna call that
Yeah,
one.
that's
Well,
his patented
yeah, that's
speech.
what
Well, that's not even the
he's
patented one. The patented one is
It's
to be
close
patient with
enough.
guys struggling.
Be patient.
Well,
Be
that and I'm
patient.
writing about it in the lineup card next week, so keep an eye out for that.
Okay. So I'm gonna have to think of something new in the next 30 seconds. Go ahead, Chris Nolan.
I'm just going to do some housekeeping and some quick self-promotion. I'm heading down to Salem and Greenville starting May 21st through
Whoop.
the 27th, I believe. So six, I'm going to be there 6 games, 3 games in Salem, 3 games in Greenville. Tune in because I'm looking to try to produce as much as possible. Maybe we'll do a book for every game.
Ooh.
There'll be a ladder. There'll be some stuff.
Wow.
So keep tuned in to the news blog because after the games, I'm going to be in the South all alone, so I'm gonna have, plenty of writing to do. So just tune in, guys.
Nice. That's going to be fun. We're really looking forward to
If anybody tells you you've got a pretty mouth, run.
it. That was inappropriate. Okay. My parting shot is just going to be a shout out to these guys that have done so much good work, Chris Hatfield, Chris Mellon, Ian, everybody. The news blog. Sometimes I see people in the forum that come up with this idea and oh, this brand new idea. Josh Reddick is hitting XX since he hit some number since he left AA when that was posted on the blog 3 times in the past month. Please read the blog. There's a lot of good stuff these guys are writing here. The book, the lineup card, the ladder, the Q&As, self-promotion myself. I'm doing some ESPN work now that's going up on the blog. The mailbag, all types of stuff like that. I think I've been harping on every single podcast, but please take a read if you get some free time at work or during the day, during school, something like that. There's some really great stuff up on there. I think that's all we got today. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully you enjoyed this one. We tried to switch it up a little bit, have a little fun with the triple play. I think it worked. If you got any ideas for our podcast, questions you want to ask, or ideas for features, drop us a line in the mailbag. Shoot me an email, and we'll try to add it to the next one. And we'll look for a pre-draft podcast to go up somewhere in the June 3rd to 5th time range.
And if you've
Until
got
then.
questions, send them into the mailbag,
Yep.
please.
Definitely, definitely.
Great. Until then, talk to you then.
Later.